Blog Talk Radio. everyone, and welcome to In Our Craft or Solon Art. Here we discuss and celebrate the poetry of writers who are inspired by the creative minds throughout history. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host Jody Melton. Jody and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Make sure if you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Jody. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you doing tonight, Pam?
Oh, I am doing wonderful. I am feeling good. I was having some horrible sinus problems earlier and got that taken care of, and I can breathe and I can hear and just, you know, life is good. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, good is good for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I made baking powder biscuits and fried ham for dinner, and, you know, you just can't get much better than that for a good, simple meal.
You saved me a plate.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, show up tomorrow, and I'll make biscuits and gravy.
That's my favorite.
Oh, yum, good comfort food.
It is.
It really is. And just so you know, Naomi is on with us. Hello, Naomi. Glad you could be here. How's it going?
Hello. I'm doing fine. I ordered in pizza.
Oh, yum. Yum. So.
Yes, I'm baking all kinds of stuff, and I'm ordering pizza.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I like pizza. Pizza is good. Now, how is it in Canada? You have the big debate over whether to put pineapple on pizza or not. And are you a pineapple person or not a pineapple person?
Well, you know, we have different types of pizzas. Like it was so funny because in the States, you guys, you don't have names for your pizzas. Like, you know, you just order your toppings aside. And here we have names for our pizzas. So if you want, like, the regular pepperoni, cheese, green peppers, mushrooms, tomato sauce, you know, well, that's called an all-dressed pizza. If you want a Hawaiian pizza, well, that's the one with the pineapples and that. And then if you want a vegetarian pizza, well, that's the one with all your veggies on it. And so far, so I was in the States, and I was in a hotel, and I phoned into Domino's, I think, in the States. And I was there on the phone with the guy, and, you know, I was there, I want an all-dressed pizza. And he says, what? An all-dressed pizza. I don't know what that is. What do you want on your pizza? I said, what do you mean, what do you want? What do I want on my pizza? I want an all-dressed pizza. And it took me a while, stupid me, you know, to debate over the phone about pizza. Oh, boy, another weird Quebec fella, you know, good girl.
Well, what part of the United States did you go into?
I was to Walt Disney World. I was in Orlando.
Oh, in Florida. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I got to say that, you know, I don't know about where Jody lives or anybody else, but here in, like, Wisconsin, Minnesota, the Midwest kind of area, or the, you know, northern area, we too name our pizzas, like, but we don't call it all dressed. We call it supreme. Like, You know, Supreme Pizza is the one with everything on it, the Hawaiian pizza, you know. How about you, Jody? Do you, in your neck of the woods, do you guys?
Well, you can do either. Here in Cincinnati, they have names for pizzas, or you can just order it with the toppings. I mean, we did grow up just ordering toppings.
I
don't eat out very often, and I ordered some Papa John's for me and my daughter last night. Went and picked it up, didn't think much about it. I got a pizza, breadsticks, and I think a 2-liter pop. It was $35. I'm like,
it
is that expensive quickly. Where you're from?
It really does. Yeah. Yeah, even places that used to be cheap just isn't anymore.
No, not even a little bit.
But you guys are a lot cheaper. You guys are a lot cheaper in your restaurants than us here. Oh my gracious! That's what I found.
Oh, wow.
Like even, you know, $35 is not much for two people eating out. You know, because me it cost me like $30 just for a little small pizza with a fries on the side here, $30. And that's not a five-star restaurant, you know, that's the corner canteen. That's what I noticed when I was in the States. Well, that was quite a time ago that, you know, I was like, when I went to the restaurant, we went to Applebee's, and my gracious, I was there. It costs, you know, it doesn't cost a lot, you know, and the McDonald's, oh my gracious, your prices at McDonald's are way lower than our prices. Here it's like it's crazy. You can't get a trio for under like $20, like, your burger, your French fry, and your drink for under $20 there. It's really expensive here. Yeah. So.
That is crazy. That is crazy for sure. Well, I have to say we have such a great lineup of poetry tonight, and it's all thanks to Jody and his choice of a topic, which was the author James Allen, and specifically his book, As a Man Thinketh. And so, Jody, I'd like to give you this opportunity to do any talking that you'd like to do about the topic that you chose.
Okay, yeah. For tonight, you know, I think it's going to be a special evening with poetry and profound wisdom coming together. And it is. It's dedicated to the timeless insights of James Allen and his classic masterpiece, As a Man Thinketh. Tonight, I hope we can embark on a poetic journey, you know, exploring the depths of our thoughts and the immense power they hold in shaping our lives and our destinies. James Allen, he was a philosopher and a poet of the mind. He taught us that our thoughts are not merely reflections of our day, but the architects of our reality. And As a Man Thinketh, though concise, is a profound exploration of the idea that our inner world creates our outer world. As we delve into the poetry tonight, inspired by Allen's work, I hope to uncover, you know, layers of meanings within his simple yet profound quotes that he had. So I invite everybody to settle in and open your minds and let the poetry inspired by James Allen guide us to a deeper understanding of ourselves.
Amen to that.
Would we like to get the poems going tonight?
Absolutely. That is very well said. I'm looking forward to the discussions that we'll have tonight, you know, as well as not only about the poetry, but about James Allen and the power of positive thinking. So very cool. Now, I'm sorry I didn't ask you this earlier, but Jody, were you wanting to just post links and assign readers, or tonight, since it's your topic, did you want to leave comments?
I can post. Yeah, that'd be fine.
All right. Well, whenever you're ready, let's go ahead and get this ball rolling.
Okay. Oh, well, I'm going to have to find it now. Give me 1 second. Let's see. Where is it at? Okay, well, you want to post the first one? I'm having trouble finding my link.
Sure, no problem. No problem. I see Naomi just bumped it up to the top.
Yeah. You see it there?
All right, I'll go ahead and grab the first one, which is Never My Reverie by Scripto. And Jody, did you want to go ahead and give that a read, please?
Yeah, give me one second. I figured out what I was doing.
Sure.
I was on the app, not the website. That's what it was. Okay, here we go. On the app, you can't get to the things you can on the website. All right, here we go. Never My Reverie. With dark catacombs, cold steps that never end, handrails which can be trusted, come and go with every bend. Some straight and true which lead me on as I'm about to fall. Some weak and spindy, badly worn, and hardly there at all. Uneven flights I'm forced to fight, they rock and roll and rise, until I can no longer trust what is before my eyes. Then suddenly a landing where I stop to take a breath. Opposing signs read safety, oversprayed with certain death. Confused by indecision and unsure which steps to take, deciding I don't trust this dream, I jolt myself awake. End poem.
Great read there, Jody, and an excellent write by Scripto, who one of the things he puts in his AN is, I dream constantly, usually in the final hour of the night, and should it threaten to take a dangerous turn, I have the ability to wake myself up. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, that's crazy, the ability to wake yourself up. I want that. Well, it wouldn't work with me anyway because of my medication, I think. I don't dream at all. The only time I dream is when, you know, if I take a nap in the early morning when my medication has waded off, or because I don't dream in the night, you know, I'd like that, the ability to wake myself up. My gracious, that would be very, very helpful. This poem has awesome rhythm throughout. I have to applaud that. I really, you know, I was really captivated by the rhythm of it. And he has a line in there, stopping to breathe. He stops to breathe and then he jolts himself awake. As he says in his poem, a dream that carries you down a path which is confusing and full of subconscious dangers. So you see that, you know, the dark catacombs, the handrails. I love his metaphors throughout. Handrails which can't be trusted. That's a really great one. And, opposing signs read safety, oversprayed with certain death. I really like that one, too. And, you know, all that that stanza with rock and roll and rise in it, really love that one. So a great write, you know, on just, getting out of those time when you're in that darkness and rising, getting awake from it and away from it, from those dangers that your mind takes you down that path, that dark path. So great, great write by Scripto. Wonderful write.
Absolutely, I have to agree. And I like what you had to say about how our mind oftentimes, you know, like basically has a sense for danger. And the way he expressed this, like I know some things you said in your written comment was it had a great rhythm to it, which I have to agree, it definitely does. And so wonderful observations. And Jody, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought he did a masterful job navigating, you know, the metaphorical landscapes of a dream. you know, or even perhaps life's journey itself, right? You know, through the imagery, the vivid descriptions. I really like, you know, the cold steps that never end and handrails that can't be trusted. You know, it gave me a sense of, you know, the anxiety and mistrust that we have for things around us in our external life, you know, our governments and just things in everyday life. That, I mean, shoot, driving down the highway at 70 miles an hour gives a little anxiety with so many people on their cell phones. You know, it's very relatable. I also thought, you know, at the poem's climax, you know, with the landing opposing signs, and I thought that encapsulated, you know, a paradoxical nature of life's guidance, you know, and how the promise of safety can be marred by the threat of danger causing all that anxiety. Yeah, I thought it was great rhythm and internal rhymes. I mean, it's very easy read, you know, very compelling. I thought, you know, it left me pondering my own metaphorical steps and the reliability of the handrails in my life. So very well done.
Absolutely, absolutely. And isn't that so true? You know, the handrails or the guardrails really do work well as a metaphor. Very cool observations. Yeah, I really liked this one. First of all, the rhyme and flow was spot on. And I have, like I told him in my written comment, I've always found the topic of dreams fascinating. And I like how he writes on his own experience with lucid dreaming, which is what that's called. You know, lucid dreaming is when you're fully aware that you're dreaming and can even control when you wake up. Or control things in the dream. I've had that happen before, but unfortunately it's not something like, I know there's actually books out there, like you can read about lucid dreaming and how to become more open to it and how to develop it in your own mind. For me though, it's always something that happens by accident. And so I enjoy and appreciate how he writes about his real experience with that. But how this also, as you were mentioning, Jody, takes us on a metaphorical journey. I actually, many years ago, and I don't remember the author, but many, many years ago, I did a Bible study with the book Guardrails. And I don't know if either of you have ever read it, but it's a really fascinating book. Even whether you're a spiritual person or not, it's still a fascinating concept. One of the things that the author mentions is that the real guardrails that are put on the side of the road are not put just like right where the danger is. They're put like 3 or 4 feet or so before the danger. And it's the same idea that God offers us up warnings, gives us instinct that we need to learn to trust. In order to, you know, stop before we get to the very edge of that danger. You know, we need to be aware of the danger, not when we're right going to fall, but when we have an opportunity to really step back and be safe. But with Scriptural's right, it reminded me of that. Of course, I don't know if he had any intention of that, but that's where my thoughts went because that's how I related it with my life. But I also like how he does write on the idea of how we need to trust our own instinct. You know, it's a dream state, but at the same time, it's his mind's representation of the importance of trusting ourselves when it comes to confronting danger. So. Amazing write and very well done. And
I was going to say, that was a great comment because you're absolutely right. You know, our intuition will never lead us astray, ever. It's only our mind that does that. Anytime, that's one thing I learned throughout the spiritual journey is intuition is huge. I mean, you have to trust that. And yeah, that's become a very important part of my life for sure. Nice comment.
Absolutely. And that is so true. So true. You know, I mean, oftentimes when we start to overthink things, you know, but definitely intuition can be a big help. So very cool. All right. And what do we have next, Jody?
Next, I'm going to put up Naomi's poem, Calming Wisdom. Put her feet to the fire.
Oh, you wanted me to read and run, that's it?
Hold on, before you start reading, I need to duct tape Naomi to her chair.
Right.
And her income.
Put some
okay, now that you have the hands up on Naomi, you can say. You can read.
Okay, this is a calming wisdom. Just breathe. Absorb things and then respond more than react. Dampen situations rather than add to the flame. Feel your energy becoming lighter and softer until those old scar-face craggy hills become something friendly rather than frightening. As you welcome in calm, your self-respect growing, as your self-control emerges, liberty and maturity gained, along with empathy and greater self-reflection. So stop and just breathe. Take the time to listen to the trees laughing, dressed in their carnival clothes, the gold and scarlet of autumn days. Let your heartbeat steadily sing in the quiet of a balmy breeze, dancing in the earthly aroma, that comforting fragrance of warm, cozy homeliness. And your confidence will flourish, ready to undertake a smoother ride across the harsh winters as you see sunlight paving all the roads that stretch ahead. End poem.
Wonderful read and write, Naomi. I'm so glad you were inspired. And Jody, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I thought that was a beautiful poem. It really encapsulated the transformative power of mindfulness and the art of being present, you know, through all the images and metaphors. You know, it kind of guided me as a reader from a place of reactivity and fear to one of calmness and self-respect and empathy, which I think is very vital in today's society. We don't have enough empathy in this world. You know, the poem definitely emphasized the importance of pausing, you know, so stop and just breathe to appreciate the simpler yet profound aspects of life, you know, like the vivid colors of autumn and comforting scent of nature. You know, it's a reminder that in the midst of, you know, this tumultuous life that we live, you know, find peace and it's attainable. You know, and within change, you know, our journeys, you know, we make it more able to be navigated, and, you know, reveals the sunlight paving all the roads that stretch ahead. Yeah, I thought it was a very, very well written piece.
Thank you.
It really, absolutely. And I really like what you had to say, Jody, about, well, your whole comment was great, but I especially like what you had to say about the importance of mindfulness and empathy. We do seem to live in a society nowadays where too often we're caught up too much in our own, you know, pain and suffering, or what we perceive as our pain and suffering, to notice what other people are going through. And mindfulness really works well. And I'm not good at practicing it, but I have an aunt who practices it when she eats and, you know, everyday life, you know, the idea of just slowing down and really taking notice, you know, of the everyday processes of life rather than, you know, rushing through your meal or your snack and I'm just using that as an example. Obviously, there's plenty of other examples of where to use mindfulness. But great observations there. And I have to say, this is a wonderful meditative rite. And when I read it earlier today, Naomi, one of my first thoughts was, you know, this is definitely Naomi. You know, and I even said that to you, I feel as if these words of wisdom are ones you truly live by. And I like that because I think many of us can get into a mindset of like, this isn't the real me, but I can still have the talent to, you know, express it in poetry. And this is poetically beautiful, but at the same time, I feel like a lot of it expresses your true self. The way you read it, the way you slowed your read down, the spacing you have between stanzas, and how each stanza itself isn't very long, so you're able to linger over each individual morsel of the poem, really gave it a thoughtful and meditative quality. I like how you write on the importance of slowing down and walking the path of life with positive thinking. And, you know, I love the imagery of take the time to listen to the trees laughing, dressed in their carnival clothes, the gold and scarlet of autumn days. You know, we just don't slow down and take enough time to notice the true beauty around us. And then in your that end stanza, you remind us that there's a reward to this behavior. There's a reward to, you know, slowing down and looking around you and enjoying life. And your confidence will flourish, ready to undertake a smoother ride across the harsh winters as you see sunlight paving all the roads that stretch ahead. Wonderful write all the way through and very well done. And
thank
would you like to say anything? Oh, you're welcome. And would you like to say anything about your poem?
Yeah, well, you know, it took me years to achieve this, you know, working with all kinds of people, doctors, you know, specialists and everything. It took me a while before I calmed down. Oh, my gracious, you know, I must have been like, you know, not too long ago, a couple of years ago. But, you know, it is rewarding. And, you know, just to take the time to, it's a learning, you know, you have to learn how to do it. So some just have it, I think, naturally maybe, and others, well, it's a learning process. And me, it was a learning process because I was always go, go, go. And, you know, if I don't watch myself, I still am. But, you know, the empathy part that I have, you know, that I know I have that. And, you know, and I have sometimes people say I have it too much because, you know, I just see somebody crying beside me and I'll burst out crying too, you know. But it's as if I can feel like another person. I don't know if you know what I mean, but you can just feel how they're feeling, you know. I don't know anywhere, you know, just somebody passes by you and you just kind of pick up their vibe. But, you know, I've always had that since I was really, really young. I could always tell when somebody around me wasn't feeling good or, you know, was down or needed help or something. And I think my kids, too, have that. So, you know, I don't know if it's transmitted or whatever, but, yeah, it's that a thing of empathy. Did you know that to measure empathy, they get people to yawn? You yawn in front of a person, and if the person yawns back, then they have a great deal of empathy.
Oh, I did not know that. Wow.
Yeah, because, you know, the reflex of yawning when somebody else yawns means that you have empathy. Because some people that don't have any empathy, well, they have probably mental problems or whatever. They don't have that reflex of yawning back. So that's something I read about. Yeah. Anyway, enough of me babbling on.
I knew that oftentimes when people yawn, other people will start yawning, but I didn't realize it was a measurement of empathy. So that's really cool to learn something new. And I like that you shared with us that, you know, empathy is something that's a natural part of you, but learning to slow down was something that you had to learn. You know, I think for anybody listening, that's important for them to understand that sometimes some of these positive traits, you know, in fact, probably many times, these positive traits are not just developed within the snap of a finger, you know, like, you know, Samantha on Bewitched, wiggle your nose and you're more patient. Wouldn't that be nice? But very cool. And thank you for sharing with us.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome.
It really was. It really was. And what do we have next, Jody?
The next one will post Served by Bill Schiller. I'll read that one. This is Served. As nasty, Tom Batones, they're well-suited as psychophants to support rich and famous. You can hear them cheer like children under tent of traveling circus. When the walrus claps flippers like hands as trained, they bow to the fattened god. He stands upon stage. From mustard to mottled scarlet, pockmarked cheeks shade, and raging speak of commander-in-chief deceiver, the principle of pandering to false and a fractured body of believers. They worship clown-clawed juggling ringmasters' mendacity. Europe struggles faster when a MAGA mouth speaks. His distortions thrust like baited lines to fish, swimming in circles by his feet with designer claws, fleeing among muck of the Lake Faraday's polluted streams, feeding puddles of odd proportion beside pernicious pond, filled with the scum of self-profit philosophy. End poem.
Great read, Jody. And he wrote to prompt 4, which was, circumstances do not make the man, they reveal him. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, first of all, I thought this was a very, very powerful piece by Bill. My gracious, it has a, you know, a raw grittiness in the lines that I love in poetry. And, you know, an awesome mix of amazing imagery and metaphors. I really like the one of the walrus claps, you know, the flippers like hands as trained. You know, so, you know, you just, because you're like, there's people like that, you know. You just follow like a blind person. You follow the masses. And, yeah, you know, you just clap like a circus walrus, you know, or whatever, you know, or whatever animal, you know, just when you're supposed to. But, yeah, so what I got out of the poem was much self-righteous hypocrisy, people who go along with the wishes of the masses just to be liked and shape, and by that shading their own dishonest, greedy goals, much as in politics, of course. And however, in their end, their true face is always somehow, you know, revealed. But, you know, he goes into a lot more in here. You know, you see the self-profit of people, even with when he talks about the polluted streams. So, you know, even the ecosystem is affected by, you know, the greediness of people, you know, that the big companies that pollute just to get more money. They don't care about what they're throwing into the air or into the ocean or into whatever. But as long as there's a profit at the end. But, you know, he touches so many different things in this poem. So it's just amazing write by Bill here.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it does unfortunately seem like as far as the circus, politics is the main arena. A lot of clowns nowadays, you know, you're right, Naomi. Too oftentimes, you know, people just want to follow the crowd. They're like those lemmings that want to just go over the cliff. You know, they don't think for themselves. They don't do research for themselves. It's all about what can I do in this moment to either be popular or make a profit for myself. And it's such a shame that, you know, greed is what oftentimes leads our, you know, guides our political leaders and many others in society. So really great observations there. And Jody, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought he delved deep into, you know, the dynamics of power and manipulation, blind devotion of followers to a charismatic leader. I think it's been throughout history that happens, I believe. You know, it has very vivid imagery throughout the poem. You know, he's in the walrus claps flippers and clown clawed juggling ringmaster's mendacity. You know, it definitely invoked a circus scene with that. You know, it served as a metaphor for the political arena, I believe, and the transformation of colors from mustard to mottled scarlet, you know, descriptions of the followers' pockmarked cheeks. You know, I think that might symbolize the shift from blind adulation to, you know, fervent zeal under the influence of a demonic figure, you know, who he's referred to as the commander-in-chief deceiver. He's always got interesting takes on politics, for sure, in his poetry. You know, I thought the poem critiques not only the figure in power, but, you know, the complexity of the followers. You know, with the mention of late prosperities, polluted streams, and pernicious pond filled with scum of self-profit philosophy, definitely suggested, you know, a critique of the corrupting influences of greed and the pursuit of self-interest that's been commonplace in our politics for quite a long time. Very powerful commentary, I felt like. You know, use of sometimes grotesque imagery, you know, but it did serve to underscore the absurdity and danger of such blind allegiance. So that was a very intelligently written poem, for sure.
Absolutely. I have to agree with you. It is an intelligent poem with powerful lines. And yeah, there is. I like what you had to say. There is a danger about blindly following. And, you know, amazing imagery and metaphors throughout. Edgy, hard-hitting lines. I like how he takes a look at the true colors of a person. Is eventually shown. I thought the fact that he used our current political landscape to as a reflection of that quote, circumstances do not make the man, they reveal him, was a great choice. I really like the imagery of swimming in circles by his feet with designer claws, swinging among the muck of lake prosperity, polluted streams. And, you know, great use of some alliteration, plus the imagery. It just really grabs your attention. Where it says, the principle of pandering to fault in a fractured body of believers. I thought that was an amazing line, reminding us that, you know, nobody's perfect. But it also speaks to me on the idea that, too oftentimes, those of us who should be standing together, you know, in unity, are broken apart, are fractured over what shouldn't even be things that we should be fighting about, because we should all have this understanding of common decency. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next, Jody?
All right. Next, we're going to go with Puddle's poem. It's called Road Trip. Pam, you want to give that a read?
Well, we actually have a sound file for this. So here we go.
Road Trip by Barb Christing. Two calloused hands upon the wheel drive my life in a bus of steel. Stop for gas, visit a friend. It slows me down, but in the end, they come on board and join my ride. We laugh, we love. We cannot hide the joy that comes with company. There is no cost. It's all for free. The miles tick past. The years advance. We don't look back. No second glance. It's straight ahead and up the hill. White knuckle corners are Frito's spill. Then racing round a hairpin turn, some fallen rocks, our bus brakes burn. Dismount the steps to take a look. We all just smile. One breath we took, then set about to clear the road. With many hands, it's a lighter load. It wasn't long till we were done. We sang some songs, we had some fun. I revved the engine, put it in drive. One more adventure, feels so alive. If I had traveled all alone, not stopped for gas nor used my phone, to call a friend, lend them a hand, a cappella would be my band, and all those stones upon the street would weigh me down, would mark defeat, and stop me in my lonesome tracks, to show me all the lonesome cracks, where joy leaks out in funny roads. All on my own, my heart implodes. And so I'm grateful for my friends. You want a ride? Well, that depends. Will you remain when trials strike? If the answer's no, then take a hike. I've only room for friends that last, who want to share a common past, reveal ourselves with no demands. In this bus we drive with calloused hands.
Wonderful read and read, Barb. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. Just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And she also wrote to prompt me, which is, circumstances do not make a man, they reveal him. And Jody, your thoughts?
I thought, as always, she did an incredible job with this prompt. It beautifully employs the metaphor of a road trip and a bus of steel to illustrate how life's journey, I feel like, is enriched by shared experiences, laughter, and mutual support. It highlights how the burdens and obstacles along the way become lighter and more manageable when faced together. I also like how she's quick to put a sword to the people in her life that just want to take, and don't offer anything in return, because it's a give and take relationship. It's, somebody that just always around just for you, to give them all the time, then that's not a true friend. A true friend would, might ask of you, but they're willing to give right back. So, I thought it was incredible how she portrayed that through the poem. So, very well done.
Absolutely. And that is so true. Whether it's friendships, family, or romantic relationships, it's got to be a balance of give and take. You need to be able to be around positive people. So I really like what you had to say there, Jody. I've got to say about that picture, I absolutely love it. I think we need about two or three of those buses for our LNP group trips. What do you think?
That
would be awesome. That would be awesome. And
who's the one hanging out the window? Is that you, Jody?
That has to be Jody, yep. And your thoughts, Naomi?
Yeah, well, you know, I love how much she starts out this poem. Of course, I agree with everything that Jody said, you know, about this being, whoops, there's kind of noise. Is that me? You know, this being a travel through life with all its ups and downs, you know, like an extended metaphor, this road trip. And, you know, how having long-lasting real friends, true real friends, can that you can count on through thick and thin makes the joy, the ride so much more easier and enjoyable and enriching, you know, with those people by your side. But, you know, I have to say I love how she starts out the poem, two calloused hands upon the wheel. So that's, you know, hands that have worked and have, you know, it's a metaphor in itself for, you know, all the hands that have a life that has been up and down and all over and worked and been through thick and thin there. You know, just the image of the calloused hands is so important there at the beginning. And, you know, I love how she says her trip would have been a cappella. You know, a cappella would be my band if she wouldn't have stopped to pick up all those, the friends along the way. She would have been alone and everything, the lonesome tracks, the lonesome cracks, you know, the all would have been more, you know, the ride would have been heavier, would have been more, you know, not as easy flowing, if you, I can say it that way, without friends aboard the bus. So, yeah, I really love this extended metaphor all the way through. And, you know, her reading of the poem, she has such a great reading voice and amazing, amazing SoundCloud. So beautifully well done, Barb. Amazing.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Always great to listen to her read. And I like how you brought up that. I liked everything you had to say, but when you brought up that first line with two calloused hands upon the wheel, drive my life in a bus of steel. And I thought, you know, I listened to your comment. I thought, you know, that is so true. You know, oftentimes the joys and, you know, happiness and positivity of life doesn't come easy. You know, we work hard to get it. So I like that she brought in the calloused hands and that imagery. And I really like the rhyme and flow in this, the imagery and the metaphors, and how she uses this bus ride that's taken with friends as an extended metaphor for the idea of traveling the roads of life. And having that positive thinking and the importance of that and the importance of choosing to hang around positive people. Now, you know, obviously we're all going to have friends who are going to be going through a difficult time. And hopefully none of us would abandon a friend, you know. But I think the kind of negativity that she makes me think of is the kind where it just constantly, no matter what a person's circumstances like, no matter how good their circumstances are, they're always negative. And they always, like, they're those energy vampires, those emotional vampires that just drain the energy from you. Because I think, you know, as you guys were mentioning, it's like the idea that being with somebody through thick and thin, traveling these roads together, but at the same time not allowing yourself to be completely consumed by people of negative thinking. And I did like her humor in this, you know. Especially when she says, you want to ride? Well, that depends. Will you remain when trials strike? If the answer is no, then take a hike. I've only got room for friends at last who want to share a common past. Reveal ourselves no demands in this bus we drive with calloused hands. I just think this is just an absolutely wonderful rite on the journey of life, taken together with friends that'll be there for you no matter what, but also be there with the positive energy to support each other. So excellent rite and very well done. And Jody, what do you have for us next?
Yeah, I just want to touch on that point you was making. That does happen. Like, if you have a positive energy, you, like, draw all the negative energies to you somehow. And it's like you absorb them almost. Like, I used to do that all the time and never realized it. And then, I don't know, probably the last 3 or 4 years, I started realizing, like, man, they're just draining me all the time. I started cutting them off with a sharp sword, started making boundaries, and when you know that people aren't really around anymore. It's interesting how that works.
It is. That's when you find out who your true friends are, when you set boundaries. And that is so important to do. You really have to set boundaries, especially when you're a person, you know, who, because people are attracted to that positive energy. They feel somebody has positive energy and they want that. But what they don't realize is they're not doing themselves or the other person any favors by sucking them dry of their positive energy. So,
all right. It's something that comes from within.
Exactly. Exactly. Love you there.
So the next one, next one I was going to post is one of Naomi's favorites, Jillie Buck. So call it Here Kitty Kitty, if you want to give that a read, Naomi.
Okay, well, I think it's a lot of people's different. She's a lot of people's favorite, Jillie Buck is. And this is Here, yeah, kitty, kitty, kitty. makes me think of my cat. And she wrote to the prompt, self-control is strength, right thought is mastery, calmness is power. Stepping in to assist with an assault, is losing all self-control, yet is pure strength. A good person loses self-control for the good. Thinking one is thinking the right thought, and being called mastery is like being given a gold star in kindergarten and being called teachable. Opinion is the only reachable option that has ruled throughout time. Countries choosing not to push the bomb doesn't make that right thinking. Just means they're having beef tonight and it's prime and they don't want to die right now. Calm. Look at both sides of this crazy canon thinking. Stupid people. What a pity, a real pity. Forget rhetoric and school. We all live and die the fool. Meanwhile, a cat is missing. Here, kitty, 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 and poem.
Great read there, Naomi. And what a wonderful write by Jillie Buck, who wrote, "To self-control is strength, right thought is mastery, calmness is power." And Jody, your thoughts?
Oh, I thought she did a wonderful job, you know, navigating through a tapestry of complex things, you know, oscillating between personal responsibility, the nature of wisdom, and universal human experience, all punctuated by a disarming, mundane concern for a missing cat. I like when she was suggesting that true strength sometimes lies in what we traditionally perceive as weakness, because that happens a lot. You meet somebody that's kind, you know, people start manipulating that person thinking that's a weakness. I mean, kindness is a strength, I believe. I've always felt that. I like, you know, how she critiqued the superficiality of perceived wisdom, you know, liken it to the simplistic rewards of early education. kind of challenges the reader to question the depth of their understanding and the accolades of it. You know, as it progressed, she had such dire consequences of such, decisions against the frivolity of everyday disputes, nuclear warfare, the contrast. It just is a stark, but also a commentary on human proprieties and the misguided sense of righteousness. I did like how she concluded it, with the frolic of dogmatic beliefs and the common ground of the human experience, all through the lens that is both critical, and she made it whimsical too. So I thought that was very well written philosophical reflection, definitely.
It is absolutely, and you're so right. You mentioned the part about we're being called teachable and questioning what we've learned. I mean, throughout our learning years, which never really stop. I mean, we technically stop going to school, but we should always be open to learning. Just because you're teachable, it's not quite the same thing as wisdom. Wisdom is learning to think for yourself. And he definitely punctuates this with that everyday moment, which I really liked. And, I thought this was a great write, and I'll definitely comment more. But I have to say, Naomi, that ending made me think of you and your cat every Tuesday night. Be right back.
Yes.
My cat is at work.
Yes, that's it. My darn cat. Yeah, I left the patio door open tonight, because it's not cold. Well, it is cold, but, it's not all that cold. It's not like freezing cold. So I let it open just a slight, and she, the screen and the patio door, she dug it out. So she made herself a hole to come in and out. her own made cat door there, which I have to fix before the summer, because I'll have a mouse or a bird, in the house, dead or alive.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Last year I had a live mouse in the house. Oh my grace, I was running after it all over the place. She brought it in. Yeah, but coming back to Julie's poem here. Yeah, I really like this all the way through. And my gracious, you're talking about teachable and wisdom, like you were saying, Pam. There's such a difference. You just look at TikTok nowadays, and oh my gracious, excuse me, but this, believing that the earth is flat and, and going from there, going downhill from there, I'm telling you, people follow the most insane, incredible fools these days. Oh my gracious, And I think, that Julie really touches on that, And I like when she says countries choosing not to push the bomb doesn't make that right thinking. Just means that they're having beef tonight and it's prime. They don't want to die. Yeah, it doesn't mean that they have a good opinion about what's good or what's wrong. Just means, they're going to maybe die if they start a nuclear war. And then the way that she brushes, she emphasizes the careless manner in which people just brush away important issues in the end there with, meanwhile, my cat's missing. Here, kitty, kitty, kitty. It's like, okay, all this important stuff, blah, 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 that's the way I took it anyway. So amazing, amazing write by Julie Buckety.
Absolutely. Oh, did you say something, Jody? I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
Okay.
I wasn't going to say something to your point about the, education system. I feel like it's almost designed to teach our kids to be factory workers, not CEOs. You know what I mean? Like, sit in a row, raise your hand, go to the bathroom, take a break, go to lunch, put in your 8 hours, go home, don't be late, come back, right? And if you get straight A's, then you'll probably be the lead guy on the factory line. But it's no coincidence that all these CEOs like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk, they all went to private schools. None of them went to public schools. And I think that's something that needs to change because these kids, they're dumbing them down big time. Like, these phones aren't helping. None of them can write. None of them, they don't even do cursive in school anymore. None of them can do math in their head. They all their answers have to come from their phone. You know what I mean? And that's putting ourselves on autopilot. I don't know. I just feel like something needs to change with that for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Teacher here. Oh, my goodness.
We're sending to Canada.
No, but it's true what you're saying, that they don't even teach cursive anymore in the schools. Yeah, well, at least here. And they're allowed calculators from a really young age now. I agree. It's awful. Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, that's taking our business. For sure.
Yep, we live in changing times, and it's definitely not always for the better. That is for sure. Julie's poem makes me think of the saying that opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one, and they all stink. I really enjoy and appreciate Julie's sense of humor and her edgy, hard-hitting lines that have a sardonic bite to them that speak on the idea of people who think they're intelligent and all-knowing, but really they're just following the crowd. You know, excellent lines all the way through. But I do especially like countries choosing not to push the bomb doesn't meet that right thinking. That just means they're having beef tonight and it's prime and they don't want to die right now. Too often times, you know, we may be making the right decision, but are we making the right decision for the right reason? So really thought-provoking lines and very well done. And what do we have next, Jody?
All right. Next, I'm going to put up a poem by Jenny the Deep called Unmade Altered Minds. And Pam, if you want to give that a read.
Sure, I'll be happy to. All right. Unmade Altered Minds by Jenny the Deep. Bruises plastered on skin are temporary, unlike the bruises drilled in heavy minds and hearts. Broken bones barely heal, but heal they do. But unrepairable are self-esteems destroyed by vulgarities. Actions they speak louder than words, yes they do, but derogatory words deafen and scar one's soul. No longer can we hear I love you or anything nice, not when stung with barbarous words mentally. Verbal stingers have been planted deep within, growing inside our learned toxic beliefs. Feelings of unworthiness fill empty voids in starting is self-sabotaging tendencies. Time nor drugs does not heal all wounds, not when vitipurative vernacular is constantly spewed. Insurance, psychiatrists, and prescriptions are costly, making it hard for sinking minds to float back up. End poem. And Jenny wrote through a variety of prompts, 1, 3, 4, 6, 10, 11, and 14. And Naomi, your thoughts.
Yeah, this is such a powerful write by Jenny, you know, on the disastrous effect of psychological abuse that it has on a person. And, of course, like, I think the U.S., because you guys don't have like us medical insurance, sometimes it's so costly to float back up, you know, because it's, you know, costs so much to have your insurance to be covered, to have a psychiatric help there when you need it. And I really liked the stanza, derogatory words deafen and scar one soul. No longer can we hear I love you or anything nice, not when stung with barbarous words mentally. And, you know, a deep and sensitive and all-important message written here by Jenny. My gracious, you know, so, so relatable by so many who've suffered this, you know, and very well done.
It really is. And it is, you're right, it is a powerful message. So great comment. And Jody, your thoughts?
Now let me just point out, most of us here in the states that I talk with, we got pretty good insurance. It's no copay, no deductible. It's called walk it off insurance. Well, that's what
there
we
is,
use.
Yeah, I have good medical myself too, thankfully, because, you know, I take about $500 worth of medication, so, you know, it really helps. But I do know people, like, usually with families, they're pretty good, and if you get the right job. But I tell you, I have known people throughout my life that have had trouble getting medical, but thankfully it's not the exception and not the rule.
I haven't had medical insurance in my for 15 years, probably. I just don't go to the doctor. I'll never get sick. So
there you go. You just have to practice your own preventive medicine.
Yeah, it seems to work. And you want, I guarantee you, me being in construction, I could go to the doctor, and he's going to figure out four different surgeries to do on me. And I don't go, and I don't get surgery. So I get up every day pretty well. I told myself a long time ago I didn't like being sick, so I just quit doing it. I'm just kidding. But, yeah, I don't really ever.
I was going to say, more power to you.
Power of thought, right?
Your thoughts on Jenny's poem.
Yeah. Well, as far as her poem goes, I thought it was a very, you know, poignant poem. Had very impactful words in it, you know, that, you know, she skillfully contrasted the physical healing of bruises and broken bones with lasting scars left by verbal abuse. And to that point, it's true. Like, if, like she was saying, like, you know, people don't say love anymore. Like, it's in the context on how we go about things. Like, laughter is, they consider that the best medicine, right? You laugh with somebody in a loving way, it feels great. But if you're a kid at school and have five people laughing at you, bullying you, that's not out of love, and that feels pretty bad. You know what I mean? So it's definitely a matter of putting love in it, for sure. You know, I thought, you know, she touched on the limitations of controversial healing methods, you know, suggested that time and medicine and therapy may not always be sufficient to heal the wounds caused by verbal abuse. You know, I thought it was a very powerful reminder in the weight of her words that she used, you know, the importance of kindness and understanding, interactions with others. You know, invited the reader to reflect on long-term effects of the words and the role empathy can play. And, I mean, that's something like we was talking earlier, that we just don't have that in this country anymore. Everybody's like, I want to have it right now. I want to have it their way. Everybody's a Burger King. Have it your way, right? and that's change, for sure. Very well written.
Yeah, I laugh, but it's sad but true. It's sad but true. We're very unwilling to adjust to, you know, what other people need. But I like how you mentioned the power of words, you know, like, and the either when you put, like, positive energy into talking to somebody or laughing with somebody, and that builds them up rather than the negativity and even, as you were mentioning, the verbal abuse. And too oftentimes, people don't understand verbal abuse. They don't understand, you know, where the effects that it has and how it tears a person's heart and is difficult to heal from. And I like how Jenny offers up that reminder and the importance of keeping our thoughts and our words towards ourselves and other people positive. So excellent right and very well done. And man, I got to tell you, every time I'm off mute, I hear that horrible noise, and I've already tried hanging up and calling back. So I apologize if anybody else hears it, but I'm at that point where I just don't have anything else I can do except for just talk through it.
Oh, you're fine. I don't even
okay.
Really hear
okay. It. Yeah,
but
I thought
yeah.
maybe.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say to that point of that poem, yeah, like I grew up, my father was very verbal, abusive. And when I was a kid, I just got to the point like, you know what? He can be however he wants to be because I'm not going to let him affect how I feel, you know, to allow the quotes that Jay Zalad tries to present. I'm the captain of this ship. Like, ain't nobody going to tell me how I'm going to feel. I feel the way I want to feel from inside, so I've carried that in a lot of relationships, and women don't seem to like that. When they're all mad and wanting to fight, I'm just calm and cool. Like, well, you're the one arguing with yourself. I don't want to argue. I don't let people affect how I feel. They don't get to control how I feel, I should say, right? So I learned that early on.
Absolutely, absolutely. You can't let people drag you into their negativity. So very cool, very cool. Yeah, and it's good that you were able to learn to become your own man and not allow the negative speaking that you grew up with to influence you in a negative way. So I'm glad you shared that with us.
Yeah, and to that note, this book helped me out a lot with that when I was a teenager. So, and I thank James Allen a lot for that. You'll hear that in my poem later on.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I actually had never heard of him until you chose this as a topic. So I have to say thank you for introducing me to a new author. Very cool. And
awesome.
What do we have next?
Next, I'm pretty sure it's a SoundCloud by Eric Spencer. It says, "Who is in the zoo?"
Yes, we do have a SoundCloud for that. So let me mosey on over there, and here we go.
Says who in the zoo? Four winds scatters. Sobriety matters. Calm eye of the storm. Most sought after norm. Cognitive constructs. Hard driven tear ducts. Attitude architect. Heart accepts or rejects. Disengage. Mind rolls out blueprints. Heart knows the difference between steeplechase and sprints. Resent, reject. Truthful heart detects what's circumspect. Each intuitive mind I meet applies the heart safety net. A city divided against itself shall fall. Scepter heart electrifies, sub judice mind call. Life only rhymes when synchronicity chimes. Mind's Milky Way miasma, cleared by perception's plasma. Opposites attract, quid pro quo, to be exact. Memento mori, life ends. Sentient hard choices saved us from the bends. Life rhymes, crystal clarity chimes. End poem.
Wonderful reading right there, Eric. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And he wrote to the quote, mind is the master power that molds and makes, and man is mind, and evermore he takes the tool of thought, and shaping what he wills brings forth a thousand joys, a thousand ills. He thinks in secret, and it comes to pass. Environment is but his looking glass. That's a really poetic quote, I have to say. Very cool. And Jody, your thoughts?
Oh, I always enjoy Eric's SoundCloud. I love listening to him. Like, even when I read his poetry, you know, off air, and I can still hear his voice in the back of my head while I'm reading it. It's pretty cool. I thought he artfully weaves together abstract concepts and vivid imagery throughout his poetry. He explores the interplay between the mind, heart, and the existential facets of life. He delves into dichotomy between cognitive reasoning and emotional depths of the heart, suggesting that true wisdom does lie in the harmonizing of these aspects, with phrases like calm eye of the storm and cognitive constructs. And, it highlights the constant search for balance and understanding in the middle of life storms. Very skillful in his use of metaphors also. I like the mind's Milky Way miasma and perception's plasma to illustrate, complexities and beauty of human consciousness. I like, how he says, when the synchronicity's chimes, that's life's only rhymes, That's, echoing the idea that life finds its rhythm and purpose not in isolation, but, in meaningful connections that we encounter. So overall, I thought, it's just a rich tapestry of thought and images that, invites reflection of the nature of existence and the power of intuition. We talked about that earlier, how important that is, the importance of aligning your heart and your mind, and how that could help you navigate the complexities of life with wisdom and grace. So, very well done. I have to read it again.
Absolutely. I have to agree. I like what you had to say about the importance of balance found between cognitive thinking and the intellect of the heart. So very cool comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, that was a great comment by Jody. I agree with everything he says. It indeed sometimes deep inside, the heart. Yeah, you have to, like they say, follow, they often say follow your heart, but, in this case, listen to your mind too, like you said, Pam, find that balance between, the logical mind and what your heart wants, because, sometimes your heart can be lead you to a blind spot. But I really loved his use of amazing creative language. He has this way of using language in such a way, a unique way. That's Eric Benson's way. And I just love, mind rolls our blueprints. Heart knows the difference between steeplechases and sprints. And that's just one fine example amidst so many others in this poem. Wonderful, wonderfully crafted piece here by Eric Benson.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. I found this a brilliant write. His word choice and imagery and metaphors is amazing. Really amazing philosophical and spiritual elements that speak on the idea of trusting your instincts and following your heart, but also knowing that there's a time and a place to engage the cognitive. I really like disengage mind roles, our blueprints, heart knows the difference between secret caves and strength. Rescind, reject, truthful heart detects what circumspects. You know, just the thought of, you know, when you offer up a truthful heart to society, sadly, you might not always get the same thing in return, but you'll know what you're offering up is honest and real, and you'll learn to engage with others who offer up the same thing. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we have next, Jody?
Well, I was wanting to further comment on that poem. Something just occurred to me. So I wrote a poem a while back. You probably don't remember. You know, I write so many. But it was about how the distance between your heart and your mind is 18 inches, right? And how that it can potentially be the longest journey we take in our life. And it's just a matter of 18 inches, right? But a profound one at that. But what occurred to me, which is pretty cool from his poem, is right in between that 18 inches is your mouth, right? If you align your heart and your mind right in the middle, will come wisdom and grace will come from that, through your voice. And I never thought of that aspect of it. So it was kind of cool to find that in perspective.
That is a really great question. Very cool there. Yeah, too oftentimes we do tend to engage the mouth before actually thinking. And that is something, that's another reason to slow down. Slow down and think before you speak. So very cool addition there, Jody. And I don't, you know, it very well could be I read that poem, but like you said, you write a whole lot. So, you know, when you get a chance, send me the link to that poem so I can read it, either read it new or read it again.
Okay.
So
I will. It's pretty cool. I think Rex commented on, you know, it's probably been a year ago maybe, so it's been a while.
I was going to say, if it was involved with one of Rex's shows, then chances are I was there, you know.
Yeah.
But goodness knows, my mind doesn't keep track of things that well, so.
Throughout the year, for sure.
And what do we have next?
All right, next I'm going to put up a poem by Talia R7, Stay on Course. I'll give that a read. All right. Stay on course. I did not know how strong I was until my back was against the wall. I did not even know my own strength until I was tested. I was weak, but I became strong. I proved my worth, and now I can smile because life is now smiling with me. To everyone out there going through some trials and tribulations, get up. Brush yourself off. Get out there, hold on to the strength inside, and try one more time. Never give up. Go out there and give it your best shot. Try again. Never stop until you reach your goal, your final destination. End poem.
Great read there, Jody. What a wonderful heartfelt write by Talia R7. I really like her voice in this and how she speaks on how oftentimes we become stronger through the trials of life and that we should always be moving forward and not giving up. I really liked the opening lines of, I did not know how strong I was until my back was against the wall. I think many of us can relate to that. And then she offers up these words of encouragement in the second stanza. To everyone out there going through some trials and tribulations, get up, brush yourself off. You know, and you learn about your, it's so important to learn about your inner strength. And to move forward, to reach that end goal. The word final destination did make me think of death, probably because of those Final Destination movies, and I don't think she meant it that way, but it works either way, whether it's, you know, you're just reaching towards a goal that happens when you're still living, or the final destination represents the end of life, and you get to the end of life, and you realize that emotionally, and you know your life, you're satisfied with it. You've completed everything you wanted to. So excellent, right, and very well done. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, you said it pretty much there, Pam. Yeah, great, right, about, you know, never giving up and pushing forward to overcome obstacles, you know, to achieve goals. And, you know, for me, up against the wall was when I had my kids. I don't know if, you know, it's for like many parents out there, but, you know, when you become a parent, you can't cave in anymore. It's as if, well, some do, but like it gives you this extra, you know, strength. Like you're not fighting for yourself anymore, just for yourself. You're responsible for these little people there that are walking beside you and that depend on you. And you know, that's where I found my strength, is when, you know, I had my kids and, you know, I had to be responsible for them. You know, that was my up against the wall period. And that's where I learned how to be strong. But, you know, for different people, it could be different things. And I think this right is so relatable and so important for so many people. And, you know, very inspiring, very powerful, right, by Talia and Deed, and very well crafted.
Absolutely. And you're right. You know, parenthood can be one of those things that definitely challenges us to be a stronger and braver person. And this definitely is a very inspiring rite. So great comment. And Jody, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is right up my alley. I love these motivational poems. That's what I love to write too. So it definitely resonated with me. What I found particularly striking is the way she shifted from a personal narrative to a universal call to action. You know, the poem transitions from a reflection on personal growth to an encouraging message for others, emphasizing solidarity and resilience. You know, the repeated exhortations to try one more time and never give up, you know, that is a powerful reminder of the importance of perseverance. I can remember when I first left my baby's mom. I mean, I was going through a tough time then, and I didn't know if it was a midlife crisis or what was going on, but I just got to the point where I'm just done, right? But I can remember the first New Year's, I wrote one word on my Facebook, and it was perseverance. That's what I wanted my goal to be that year. Everybody asked me, why would you write that word? Why was that all about? I was like, that's just for me. You know what I mean? But, you know, I thought, you know, her sentiment on life is now smiling with me. It beautifully symbolized the harmonious relationship one can achieve with life after weathering storms. So, yeah, it definitely resonated with me as a motivational anthem for anyone who's facing, you know, difficulties. It reminds us that within us lies an untapped well of strength and resilience. Very well done.
Absolutely. And I have to say, if you're going to write one word on Facebook, perseverance is definitely a great one, and it's a very important word. So very cool comment. All right. And just to let you know, Naomi had to be right back. So, what do we have next?
All right, next, I think we only have, like, guys left, so what?
It doesn't matter, us girls. It's really, it's not like a sensual poetry night. The majority of the rites for tonight, I think, are considered gender neutral. You know, obviously guys and girls wrote them, but, you know, you can pretty much assign for whoever.
All right, so with that being said, Pam, you want to read this one by Kent Smith? It's In the Crying of Crows.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Welcome back, Naomi.
I thought he said me. It's okay.
No. I think you did say Pam, right?
Yeah. I was going to have Pam. Okay. I didn't think Naomi was back.
All right. See, In the Crying of Crows by Ken Smith. In the crying of crows, a slender, stubbled tree hidden and forgotten, locked from the sunlight of attention and interaction. Branches from its head hung black in the dark, the long hair hissing and roiling with snakes and became Medusa, then toppled to the ground, tipped and turned into not a cauldron but a bell, a large garden goblet of light green shoots, incandescent stems with droopy heads of young red roses, and poem. And he wrote to quote 13, which was, let me check here real quick, quote 13 was, as a man thinketh in his heart, so shall he be. And Naomi, hear from us.
Yeah, you know, I thought this was an amazing extended metaphor reflecting on how our thoughts can shape us into who we will become, using nature absolutely cleverly and you know, wonderfully. This is a unique, very intelligent, unique extended metaphor used here. Very brilliant. I could be wrong, but that's what I read out into it. So just amazing by Ken Smith here.
Absolutely. And great observations there. I like that. And I had a similar thought myself. I love the extended metaphor in this. and Jody, your thoughts.
Yeah, initially, you know, the hidden and forgotten, the tree seemed to exist in obscurity, you know, deprived of sunlight, of attention and interaction. You know, them images evoked a sense of isolation and neglect. Then, you know, it transitioned to branches from its head hung black in the dark, introduced a darker, more ominous tone, you know, reminiscent of Medusa with her serpentine hair. You know, suggesting a phase of danger and adversity. But then, however, the poem, I thought, took a transformative turn as the tree, likened to Medusa, toppled to the ground and metamorphosized into not a cauldron but a bell, signaling a shift from vessel of brewing troubles to one that announces presence and resilience. I thought, you know, the poem's strength lied in its allegorical richness. You know, invited the reader to find their own interpretation of growth, transformation, and resurgence in the face of adversity. So, I thought that the final imagery blossomed with hope and renewal. So, I really liked how that transition is very well done.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like how you spoke on in your comment about transformative power. And also brought up the part about Medusa, which was really great imagery, but also another example of transformation, you know, within mythology. And I like how he uses the extended metaphor to speak on the power of growing against circumstances. This actually reminded me of how, and I'm horrible with, I do not have a green thumb, but the one tomato plant I ever had grow really, really good was one that I completely forgot I had even planted it. And, you know, left to its own devices, it's a lot better than those tomato plants that I hovered over. it is interesting, though, how, you know, some people, they'll grow up in an emotionally or physically abusive environment, which is always so sad to, you know, hear about. And they'll find that inner strength, that inner light, and they'll keep growing away from that environment. Sadly, that doesn't always happen, but sometimes we're able to use our own power, our own positive energy to be transformed into the person that we want to be. So amazing rites and very well done. And what do we have next, Julie?
Well, before that, I was going to mention, have you ever seen that, as seen on TV, the topsy-turvy for tomato plants? That thing is incredible.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that grows the best.
Oh, yeah, that does look, that looks interesting, I have to say. I don't know if I could, well, I know since I live in an apartment, the only growing I'm thinking of doing is I'm thinking of getting some pots and, you know, doing some indoor, like, growing, like, you know, like rosemary, thyme, you know, chives, that kind of thing, you know, like that I can contain within, a few pots.
You have a balcony above your, you have a little balcony?
I do, yes.
You can just hang a balcony above you. It's real user-friendly. You don't have to do much, I promise. And you'll get the best tomatoes you've ever had.
Oh, that is awesome. I will definitely have to check that out. Very cool. Very cool. Yes, I do have a little, like, balcony thing. So, very cool. And let me see here. All right. And I was the last one to comment on that. So now we're moving on to the next one. And what do we have next, Jody?
Next is Life of the Gun by Paul D. Fisher. Naomi, you want to give that a read?
Okay. Life of the Gun. This is a story that has often been sung. Throughout history, some lived by the sword or the gun. In armies or hunting, they learned deadly trade. So many died soon, but some fortunes were made. Most learned to travel, be quick on their feet. Life forged in steel, hard fate awaits, quick death on the street. Many such warriors have lived on the run, dodging men who live by shadowy sword or smoke of a gun. This game is for young men, fast on a wink, as a wink. They make a strike, then gone in a blink. Another such man may be here next week. So hard to settle if you live by the gun. Put it down, then another like you will come. Does a gun own a man, or a man own a gun? End poem.
Great read there, Naomi, and what a wonderful thought-provoking write by Paul D. Fisher, PhD, who wrote to Prompt 10. And Jody, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought he did a masterful job exploring the age-old narrative of living by the sword or gun, you know, delving into the cyclical nature of violence and the transient lives of those who embraced it. And then it touched on a historical context, you know, where skill and combat, whether in war or hunting, could lead to both fortune and fatal endings. I thought he also reflected on the restless existence of warriors that were on the run, you know, constantly eluding those who might be seeking retribution. You know, the mention of this lifestyle being suited for young men, fast as a wink, kind of captured the fleeting nature of such a life. You know, marked by quick actions and quicker departures, also leaving room for another to take one's place. Very philosophical question, you know, of control and ownership between a man and his weapon, thought-provoking piece. You know, it served as a reflection on the cycle of violence and the individual's role within it. You know, definitely invited the reader to consider the implications of living by the gun. I myself never owned a gun. I've always just thought that I had two guns on my left and right arm. That's plenty. But no. I just thought it was just never liked it.
Sorry.
Oh, you're good. You're good. Yeah. I was done.
I have to say, I personally don't own a gun, but I'm definitely not opposed to it. I mean, I grow up, I live in an area where there's a lot of hunters and a lot of gun owners. So I'm not opposed to it. I just don't own one personally. But it is definitely a wonderful, thought-provoking right and great comment there. And Naomi, your thoughts.
Oh, my gracious. Don't get me started on guns. Oh, I'm from Canada. Eh? We don't believe in guns here. No, no, no.
Oh,
even pepper. We have
guns. Mooses to shoot.
We know if pepper spray isn't even legal here. It's just like, but you know, he brings up a very thought provoking question. You know, like, does a gun own a man or a man own a gun? Does, you know, violence, you know, own the man? Is he naturally violent? Or does the man, control his violence? So you can see it that way, too. But a very thought-provoking piece, indeed. Very well done.
It really is. Absolutely. And I like how you bring up the idea that we have that free will to control, the potential to have that free will to control how we react when it comes to the violent nature. So very cool observations. And I'm going to go ahead, since we don't have a whole lot of time left, and say, what do we have next, Jody?
Okay, we have The Undertaker by Robert A. Snow. And I'll give that one a read. Now looking down below from on the mount, more bodies than a squad of men could count. The Undertaker sees no rest in sight. He'll toil to burn them for the morning light. For he knows that the sunrise more will come, marching to their death by fife and drum. As fusillades fall from forbidden skies, destroying all who dash before his eyes. To what avail doth man try unto man? For surely this cannot be nature's plan. And plain as anyone can clearly see, such war shall never be a remedy. And thus he walks among the falling men and shakes his head in wonder once again. 'Tis not his place to succor and refresh. 'Tis his to stoke the fire and burn the flesh. End poem.
Great read there, Jody, and what an amazing poem by Robert Lee Snow. I'm really glad he was inspired. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, first I have to point out the wonderful, like you said, the wonderful flow and rhythm of this poem, but also, you know, the all-important message that depicts the meaninglessness of war. And, I really liked that I thought it was really captivating, you know, that he addresses the question through the eyes of an undertaker. You know, who is the only winner? When you think of it, when in wartime, he's the only one that wins with all the death count. So, you know, brilliant, brilliant write on the meaninglessness of war. And, well done by Robert A. Snow, for sure.
It really is. It really is. And, I like what you had to say about how the only winner is the Undertaker. It's also such a sad career, and I have to say I really like how he did write this from the point of view of somebody whose career is death and who's making a living off of the futility of war and the violence of war, and, you know, witnesses all these lives coming to an end. And, I like how he says, for surely this cannot be nature's plan, and plain as anyone can clearly see, such war shall never be a remedy. Wonderful lines and very well done. And Jody, go ahead and share your thoughts with us and then bring us on to the next poem.
Okay. Yeah, I thought, you know, the Undertaker's role is particularly symbolic. You know, he's resigned to his task, yet remains witness to the tragedy. Overall, I thought the poem was very powerful commentary on the destructive nature of war and a lament for the loss of life and the distortion of human values. You know, it definitely challenges the reader to consider the true cost of conflict and the paradox of seeking peace through war. So, yeah, very well done.
Absolutely. Great observation.
And next, I'll be posting Equal to the Deed by Berentoff. Pam, you'd like to give that a read?
I would be happy to. Equal to the Deed by Berentoff. Men took the road to Fox Valley to stake a claim upon the land. They came from blight across the sea with hopes the few would understand. When times were good, the sod gave way and crops grew quickly from the soil. They built their hopes on sand and clay and placed their faith on God and toil. Elijah had called these lands too arid to accept good seed, but men who have the tending hands might be equal to the deed. When drought arrived, it stripped the land of every seed and stem they sowed. Some pulled up stakes to drift like sand, with nothing taken, nothing owed. But some remained to bear their cause, too scared to leave their plans to dust. You could say stubborn is a flaw, but with no steel, there is no rust. Eventually, the rains returned, and men with skill had turned their ways. With nothing ventured, nothing earned, and with true grit, patience might pay. End poem. Oh, what an absolutely powerful write. And Jody, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought, you know, this poem elegantly narrates the resilience and determination of the settlers in Fox Valley to, you know, confronting and overcoming the challenges. The shifts from the cyclical nature of hardship and prosperity to, you know, reflecting on the settlers' struggle with drought and their steadfast refusal to abandon their dreams, which life is always going to test you. You know, if you have a dream in mind, life's all for that. You know, you get your dream, but see how bad you want that dream, right? And you're going to put roadblock after roadblock to, you know, test your intestinal fortitude. See how badly do you want that? Power away? Like, that's too difficult. I think I'll just fall back and settle into where I'm at. But, you know, you got to face adversity. It's a virtue. You know, that'll lead to rejuvenation and growth in your life. Very well done.
Absolutely. And that is so true. Oftentimes people don't bring their dreams into fruition because they don't realize that it takes work to do so. Or then they do realize and they give up. So great observation. And Naomi, your thoughts.
Yeah, I really like this poem a lot. My gracious. Getting back to my comment there. Where is it? Oh, okay. I really like this poem. The story of Jody just said, you know, the settlers and how, you know, you have to believe in your dream. You have to work for it. You have to strive for it. You have to, you know, you have to go for it. And you have to work hard, you know, and then the people that are not willing to do that, well, you know, like Jody just said, well, a lot of people are like that, you know, they just say, okay, I'm done with that, that's it, you know, it's too much effort to put in and they don't go forward. To succeed in your dreams, it takes a lot of determination, hard work, patience, and you have to have a positive mind. Above all else, you have to have that positivity, you know, that will that you're going to conquer everything, that belief. And so in that way, you know, the growth of the crop in a harsh, arid environment as a wonderful extended metaphor to show that. So a great, great poem indeed.
Yep. Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment. Really a wonderful rhyming poem, brilliant imagery and metaphors, and an excellent write on the seeds of potential that do not grow unless cultivated with patience and an understanding that you have to keep moving forward. So great, right, Baron Tom? Thank you for sharing it with us. And Jody, what will be our last poem of the night?
Well, I had one I was going to put on after this, if we had time, but this is the last
one.
Sure. Maybe if we have. But Naomi, you want to give this a read? An Act of Mutilation by Brian T. Duffield.
An act of mutilation. Our hands map a past journey, education or self-mutilation, or maybe self-crucifixion. A silvered Parker pen gripped like a dart, pressed hard by thumb and forefinger, or a sharpened spear stabbing sense. Black ink tattooing, narrow faint paper etched with cramped italics, scrawled and scripted text, overwritten like enameled plates engraved with icons of loss. Look now, a middle finger knuckle, knotted and gnarled, like limestones shaped by seismic shifts or encrusted rock, fossil-like contorted or Bronze Age mound, weathered by time but leaving a scar like stigmata, a sign of self-resurrection. End poem.
Wonderful read, Naomi. Such powerful lines in this write. Brilliant imagery and metaphors. I like how he writes on personal growth that comes from our past mistakes, our experiences, those experiences that leave scars but also leave us a stronger person. And Jody, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought the poem powerfully captured the paradox of writing as an act, as both, you know, deeply personal and universally resonant, you know, leaving a lasting impact on both the writer and the reader. So I thought he did a very good job with that. Nicely done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Well, I left my comment in writing, so if Jody wants to take the time left to read his poem, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, let me get it posted real quick. Here we go. All right. This is a poem I wrote. I thought we honestly thought we was going to have trouble covering the time, but we did a very good job with that. But, all right, so here we go. This is called As This Man Did Thinketh. In the realm of thought where ideals weave, a book, As a Man Thinketh, did I receive. Its pages, like sails caught wisdom's breeze, guiding my journey through life's seas. James Allen's words, profound and clear, whispered of power close and near. The mind, he said, shapes joy or gloom, a garden that either flowers or doth bloom. With every chapter a seed was sown, in the fertile grounds of thought my mind had grown. Belief took root, and from it came a strength within, a spiritual man. I learned that thoughts like streams can carve through hardest rock with steady nerve. And as I steered my mental plow, I find my world transformed. And how? Through valleys dark and peaks so bright, his wisdom was my guiding light. Not fate, but thoughts that in me dwell, dictating my heaven or my hell. In moments weak, when shadows fell, I'd recall a man is as he thinks, and how my words cast a spell. With newfound courage, a sturdy mast, against life's storms I ventured on, fierce and vast. This to me a beacon through the night, illuminated paths with insight bright. Not by chance nor external sway, but by my thoughts I sculpt my way. So here I stand by Allen's creed, planting in my mind a positive seed. For in the garden of my mind I've seen flowers of joy where thorns used to be. As pages turned, so did my fate, with As a Man Thinketh as my first mate. Inscribed within a truth so bold, in the forge of thought, I made my mold. So many thanks to James Allen, and the book he scribed was showed. I'm the captain of this ship, navigated from inside. And boom.
Wonderful read and write, James Nolet. What a great tribute to the author, James Allen, and his book, As a Man Thinketh. I like how you write this as a tribute, but you also write on your own personal growth and the way that you have learned to plant those seeds of positive thinking and of hope. And the idea that you learned this from this book and from the messages that you receive, and then you put it in to action. And such wonderful lines all the way through, but I particularly like, through valleys dark and peaks so bright, whose wisdom was my guiding light. Not faith but thoughts that in me dwell, dictating my heaven or my hell. Wonderful lines and very well done. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Well, we're out of time now. I just add that I really like the ending line there. I'm the captain of this ship, you know, which is yourself, navigated from inside. I thought that was amazing, amazing lines, and what a great, powerful finish, you know, to be that assertive and that, you know, that minded, you know, and how the book transformed you is just a beautiful testimony. So bravo.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad we had time to get that in because that was important to me.
Absolutely, absolutely, anytime. Wonderful, wonderful show tonight. Thank you, Jody, for being my co-host. I always appreciate you. Thank you, Naomi, for calling in and joining us. You are very much appreciated. Thank you to Robbie for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, was listening while we're on live, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. You can join us in about 27 minutes for Break On Through with myself and Rex. And, of course, make sure to keep an eye out on all the contests and topic boards put up by our late-night poet hosts and hostesses. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.